This is Talk is Cheap on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, I went to the O'Connell Conference at the Eugene Law Center, and the keynote speaker was on the Voting Rights Act. And so some key takeaways. It's a bit dry, but some key takeaways. Both me and another guy asked the keynote speaker after, who will be introduced here momentarily, about Justice Roberts, and I asked him about Supreme Court legitimacy, and he said that both their actions are making the Supreme Court and John Roberts questionable and a candidate for reform. It's because they're become illegitimate, like a banana republic. They are this is me saying this, they're basically working for multinational corporations, just like a banana republic. So, in my own opinion. And then, I'm not going to play, the other speakers were talking about transgender rights, and so I'm not going to play those, because you have to be a lawyer, really, to listen to those. So, but you should listen to the other speakers of the O'Connell Conference at the Eugene Law Center. Just a takeaway from that is one of the things they're talking about is the children have a right to be taught about whatever they want to be taught about and a wide variety of things. My own thing is proximity. Okay, there's a thing called proximity. I grew up during busing, so I had a lot of exposure to black people in Los Angeles. And plus, I lived in Los Angeles in a big city, so I was also exposed to a lot of Latino. I was also exposed, I've been known transgender people since I was 13 years old. My mother worked at the Hollywood Wax Museum in Hollywood. And so in my own opinion, why we have homeschooling at all, to me, that's child abuse. That children should be exposed to a wide range of things at a fairly early age. And that's how we accept people as they are. And, you know, I used to think we should put all the bigots off on an island somewhere, but that doesn't work. We're all part of a planetary system here. We can't just isolate people, because that's how wars are started. So, proximity, in my own opinion. So please listen to if you get a chance to listen to the O'Connell Conference on what's going on with transgender rights. But this is on the Voting Rights Act. He said that Uruguay and Australia have better voting rights than we do here in the United States. Australia, because of the Aborigines. So let's get to it. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
Speaker, Professor Richard Hassan from UCLA. Professor Hassan will be speaking to us today about the past and future of the Voting Rights Act at the U.S. Supreme Court. An internationally recognized expert in election law, Professor Hassan is the Gary T. Schwartz Endowed Chair in Law, Professor of Political Science, and Director of the Safeguarding Democracy Project at UCLA School of Law. He has produced extensive scholarship about election law and remedies, and he often writes for and speaks with the popular press. His new book, A Real Right to Vote, How a Constitutional Amendment Can Safeguard American Democracy, was published by Princeton University Press in February 2024. Professor Hassan earned his BA from UC Berkeley and a JD, an MA, and a PhD in political science from UCLA. We will have time for questions from the audience at the end of this lecture. If you are joining us via the live stream, you are welcome to send your questions in the Q&A function. Please join me in welcoming Professor Richard Hassan.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Dean, for the nice introduction, and thank you to the school for hosting me today. It's a beautiful day, my first time in Eugene, and unfortunately it's a quick trip for me here, but I'd be very happy to come back and I can explore your beautiful area. So the dean mentioned that I wrote a book that came out last year called A Real Right to Vote, and it talks about how the United States Constitution does not have in it a right to vote. If you think about the Constitution, when it was originally written, legislatures chose the president, legislatures chose the Senate, and who was allowed to vote for members of Congress? Whatever each state said. And then as we added to the Constitution, there was never, you have the right to vote. It was always, if you're going to hold an election, don't discriminate on the basis of race. Don't discriminate on the basis of sex. Don't discriminate on the basis of someone being aged 18 to 21. So many of the problems we have today is because our Constitution is old and very hard to amend. So I'm going to be talking about a piece of that problem, and it's a piece that relates to black voting in the United States and also to the power of Latinos, Native Americans, Asian Americans, and black Americans in the United States, and the path of the Voting Rights Act through the Supreme Court. And the bottom line is going to be that many of the hard-fought battles that led to great success are now in danger, and there's a pretty good chance that by the time you gather for this forum next year, that another key part of the Voting Rights Act could either be declared unconstitutional or could be rendered useless. And that's a huge thing, and I'll talk about what the implications are. But I want to trace the history, the past, the present, and the future of voting rights, and the Voting Rights Act in particular at the Supreme Court. So after the Civil War, there was a series of amendments. They're sometimes referred to as the Reconstruction Amendments. 13th Amendment barred slavery. 14th Amendment did a number of things, including providing for equal protection of the laws and protection of due process from the states. And the 15th Amendment, which bars discrimination in voting on the basis of race. It's a short amendment, and it just has two parts. One part barring discrimination voting on the basis of race, and the second part giving Congress the power to enforce the amendment by appropriate legislation. Very short amendment, but very consequential. It says you cannot have race discrimination. And right after the Civil War, black men enjoyed the franchise in many southern states. It was only after the disputed 1876 election, which ended with Democrats being able to repress black voting in the South, that we got the period of Jim Crow that lasted until the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So let me tell you about one case that went to the Supreme Court in 1905. It's called Giles versus Harris. In this case, a man, black man, citizen of the United States, resident of Alabama, went to the Supreme Court and said, Alabama's not letting me register to vote because I'm black. And that's a violation of the 15th Amendment. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, that does seem like a violation of the 15th Amendment, but we're powerless to do anything about it. There's nothing we can do. We can't give you a remedy. It's really up to the states. And so that was 1905. And until 1965, with the passage of the Voting Rights Act, in many states, it was difficult, if not impossible, for black voters to vote in states like Alabama and Mississippi. And I'll show you some statistics in a few minutes. What was going on was disenfranchisement and voter suppression on a scale much worse than anything we see in the United States, something that kind of hard to imagine today, given our expectation that voting is going to be easy, that registration is going to be available to all citizen adult residents in the United States. It was really the civil rights movement in the 1960s that really started to take off after some very prominent protests, including in places like Birmingham and Selma, Alabama, which caused Congress, the year after the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, to pass the Voting Rights Act of 1965. This was, in some ways, an easier battle to have fought. Lyndon Johnson was president. John F. Kennedy had been assassinated. There was a feeling that the Civil Rights Act was not enough, and now was the time to tackle voting rights. And Martin Luther King was very influential in making that push. When the Voting Rights Act was first passed, it had some key provisions. One provision allowed federal registrars to go down and register voters. If the local authorities weren't going to do it, the federal government was going to do it. Another provision allowed for observation to make sure that voters were being allowed to vote and not being intimidated by government officials or by mobs to prevent them from voting. And then another provision, which initially was to last for only 5 years, has become known as the preclearance provision. And what this basically said was that jurisdictions with a history of race discrimination, these are states that used a test or device for voting like a literacy test or some other kind of requirement to vote, and that had voter turnout below 50%, were going to have to get approval from the federal government before they could make changes in their voting rules. And they'd have to show that the changes would not make minority voters worse off. The reason for this provision was that what was going on in the 1950s and early 1960s was that the Department of Justice would go down to southern states. They would challenge a discriminatory voting rule. They'd have to litigate the whole case. They'd win the case. They'd leave town. And the state would pass a new law that would be discriminatory. So this was meant to reverse that burden, and it was meant initially to be temporary, last only for 5 years. Same thing with a ban on literacy tests, focused in the southern states and limited to 5 years. The initial passage of the Voting Rights Act was a dramatic success. So in Mississippi, for example, black voter registration was 6.7% in 1964, and it was 59.8% in 1968. Talk about a dramatic effect of a law. It was tremendously successful. It didn't create full equality, but it was a foot in the door. We still saw a gap in turnout between the rates of registration and voting of whites and blacks, but the gap considerably narrowed. So in this way, in terms of stopping the basic disenfranchisement of voters, the 1965 Voting Rights Act was a great success. And the Supreme Court was very willing to enforce the act and to read it in ways that protected minority voters. So in 1966, South Carolina went to the Supreme Court and they said, this is an infringement on our sovereignty. You can't make us get federal approval before we change our laws. And the Supreme Court said, this is strong medicine. This is not something that's usually done, but because of your persistent history of race discrimination in voting, and because of your resistance to everything that's happened, we're going to allow this to happen. The Supreme Court also decided a case in 1969 called Allen versus State Board of Elections, which read the kinds of things that had to be subject to preclearance very broadly, meaning lots of voting changes were going to be subject to preclearance, as little as moving a polling place across the street and as broad as a state's redistricting plan. And then in 1970, when Congress renewed the Voting Rights Act, one of the things it did is it made the literacy test ban national. Oregon didn't like it, went to the Supreme Court. In Oregon versus Mitchell, the Supreme Court said that it was constitutional to ban literacy tests, even though the court in 1959 had held that it didn't violate the Constitution to impose a literacy test on people before they could vote, so long as it was not done in a racially discriminatory way. So these three decisions were among the most important that solidified the Voting Rights Act as an important addition. So in 1970, the act is renewed for another 5 years. In 1975, it's renewed for another 7 years, and more states are added, including parts of Texas, Arizona, including parts of New York and California, again, using this formula. Certain parts of these states and additional states that weren't on the original list were added to. No states were taken away, but more states were added to this preclearance process. So things seem to be going pretty well in terms of actually getting voters registered to vote and giving them opportunities to vote. But just because you give an opportunity to vote, it doesn't mean that those minority voters who had been discriminated in the past could have a fair share of political power. So consider a place like the Mobile, Alabama. In Mobile, the black population was about 35% of the city of Mobile. Blacks preferred one set of candidates. Whites preferred other set of candidates. We call that racially polarized voting. And all the whites, there are more whites than blacks in Mobile, and no black preferred candidate had ever been elected to serve in Mobile city elections. They used an at-large system. Everybody gets to vote for everybody. And this was challenged as discriminatory under the 15th Amendment. And the Supreme Court, in a case called City of Mobile versus Bolden, said the only way that the black voters could win in their suit is if they could prove that the design of the at-large system was done with the intent of discriminating. It turns out it wasn't, because at the time the at-large system, everybody votes for all the members of the city council, at the time that this was put in place, blacks weren't voting. And so you couldn't show that intent. And so there was essentially no remedy. So around the country, there were places where you had whites preferring one set of candidates, minority voters preferring another set of candidates, and a set of either district lines or multi-member districts or at-large districts where minority voters could not elect their candidates of choice. In 1982, when the Voting Rights Act came up for renewal, there was an attempt to try to, through a statute, reverse the bad effects of the City of Mobile case. And in the discussions of this, the Reagan administration did not want to expand the Voting Rights Act to cover the situation I just described, where there wasn't a discriminatory intent necessarily, but there was a discriminatory effect. The point person behind the scenes, the one who was writing all the memos saying, let's try to not expand the Voting Rights Act, was a special assistant to the Attorney General named John Roberts. We know who that John Roberts is today. Here's a picture of him with Ronald Reagan. John Roberts and Ronald Reagan lost this battle, and Congress, on a bipartisan basis, changed part of the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, to provide that minority voters should have the same opportunity as other voters to participate in the political process and to elect representatives of their choice. John Roberts and the Reagan administration was concerned that this would lead to proportional representation. Bob Dole brokered a compromise where there's a sentence in Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act that said, nothing in here requires proportional representation. And so it went until 1986, when the Supreme Court decided a case called Thornburg versus Jingles, and I won't go into the details, but they basically set up a multi-factor test to decide when minority voters did not have the opportunity to elect their candidates of choice. And the typical remedy in those cases is either to create single-member districts where minority voters get a chance to elect their candidates of choice, or to change the district lines so that minority voters get to do that. The effect of Section 2, as it was revised in 1982, is dramatic. If you look at the orange or brown colored graph behind me, this shows you how many black representatives there were in Congress from 1869, after the Civil War and with the passage of the 15th Amendment, little blip when there was actual representation before the repression in the South. And then look what happens. Look, you can see the area where here's where Thornburg versus Jingles is passed. Look what happens to minority representation. You start getting black preferred candidates, also Latino preferred candidates. And this rule in Section 2 applies not just to Congress, it applies to state legislatures, it applies to local bodies. Any place where there are districts and there's racially polarized voting, there's the chance to get some fair representation. And so it went. Minority representation increased dramatically after the 1982 Voting Rights Act. But then there was pushback. There was pushback because the Department of Justice, when it was doing its reviews of those covered jurisdictions to decide whether or not to allow states to make a change in their voting rules, they were being pretty aggressive in trying to push states, not just to keep the status quo, but to make things better for the chances of minority voters to elect their candidates of choice. Exactly how they did it, it's a little complicated. I could talk about it in the Q&A. But essentially, the Department of Justice said, we will not approve your redistricting plans unless you create another black opportunity district, Latino opportunity district, et cetera. When a state was told to do that, they weren't told where to put it. And so incumbents would come in and they would draw their districts in order to protect whichever party was in power. And sometimes that led to some weirdly shaped districts, including this district behind me, which is a North Carolina congressional district. At one point, it was so narrow, according to the Almanac of American Politics, the joke was that if you opened your car doors and rode down the highway, you'd kill most of the people in the district, because it was so narrow. The Supreme Court, in a 1993 case called Shaw versus Reno, said it violates the Equal Protection Clause when you draw districts where race is the predominant factor in drawing these lines, and you don't have a compelling reason to do it. And so in Shaw versus Reno, and then follow-up cases, race was found to be the predominant factor, and then sometimes the Voting Rights Act was offered up as a compelling reason to do it. And in every case, until the one I'm about to talk about, the Supreme Court said, well, the Voting Rights Act doesn't require drawing funny-looking districts like this. It only requires drawing districts where minority voters are concentrated in an area, and you could draw what's called a compact district. After this, the Supreme Court moved in decidedly hostile ways towards interpreting the Voting Rights Act. And matters came to a head in 2006. Remember I told you in 1982, Ronald Reagan signs a 25-year extension of preclearance. In 2006, the question was what was going to happen now? And is that preclearance formula, the formula that was based on voter registration turnout data from 1964 and 1968, is Congress going to update the formula? And Congress didn't update the formula. I and other election law professors testified to Congress and said, this is going to be a problem for the Supreme Court. But they decided to roll the dice. And they kept things as it was for another 25 years until 2031. And you probably know this part of the story. In 2013, after a warning in 2009, in 2013 in Shelby County versus Holder, the Supreme Court held that the preclearance rules were no longer constitutional. Even though they were upheld in that South Carolina versus Katzenbach case, and even though they had been upheld a number of times since then, the Supreme Court said the passage of time, things have changed in the South, you need to have updated proof of intentional discrimination to justify such a law. And Justice Ginsburg, for the dissenter, said, it's going to be hard to show intentional discrimination because this law has been effective. It's like putting away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you're not getting wet. And we know what happened. Within 2 hours of the Supreme Court's decision in Shelby County versus Holder, Texas, which had a very strict voter ID law, which had been put on hold by the Justice Department because it couldn't get pre-cleared because it would make minority voters worse off, Texas said, we're enforcing our law. And the turnout gap between white voters and minority voters has been increasing, especially in formerly covered jurisdictions. Now, in the case that John Roberts wrote, Shelby County versus Holder, he said, we're not saying anything about Section 2. This is not about Section 2 is still there. It applies nationwide. That will protect minority voters. And now Section 2 is under attack. We're now more than a decade past Shelby County, and the present Roberts Court has been chipping away at the Voting Rights Act. I don't have it on the slide here, but in a case that was decided in 2021 called Brnovich versus Democratic National Committee, the Supreme Court for the first time had to interpret how to apply Section 2 to laws like voter ID laws, laws that don't involve redistricting. And remember, in the redistricting context, the court had come up with a pretty clear test in that Thornburg versus Jingles case, which basically said, give minority voters a fair share of the seats so that they have a chance to elect their candidates of choice. In Brnovich, Justice Alito, who has never sided with a voting rights plaintiff since he's been on the court in 2006, Justice Alito wrote an opinion that created such a difficult test to try and use Section 2 to challenge something like a voter ID law that there has not been a successful case, even at the district court level, anywhere in the country since that decision came out in 2021. That decision didn't touch its application to redistricting. And this now brings us to the current moment. So there's a case that was argued last March at the Supreme Court called Louisiana versus Calais. Louisiana versus Calais, the backstory of this case is that Louisiana had, I think, 8 congressional districts. One of those districts was a Black Opportunity District. In a case before Louisiana versus Calais, a group of Black voters sued and said, you need to draw a second Black Opportunity District, because if you look at the population of Louisiana and how they are set forth under the Jingles test, there should be a second district that should be drawn. The court agreed. Louisiana was forced to draw a second district. They drew this funny-looking district. They were protecting Mike Johnson and others, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, from Louisiana. They drew this district. And the case went up to the Supreme Court as a racial gerrymandering case. Remember I told you, racial gerrymandering happens when race is the predominant factor in drawing district lines, and there's no compelling reason to draw in this way. The way the case was argued back in March was a fight over what the predominant reason was for drawing the lines. The new plaintiffs in this case said it was all about race, but Louisiana defended and said, no, it wasn't about race, it was about politics. We were trying to protect our Republican incumbents. And the case was argued, there have been a number of cases like this, is it race or party? Now, as an aside, I think that's a crazy question to ask in the South when you have two-thirds of whites voting for Republicans and 90% of blacks voting for Democrats. It's hard to discriminate against a party without discriminating on the basis of race. But this is what the Supreme Court says the exercise is, race or party. And at the end of the Supreme Court term, the court said, we're not deciding this case. We're going to have re-argument. That's always a bad sign. And this happened with Citizens United. They said, we're going to have re-argument, and they said, and we want you to brief the question if we should overturn old precedent, which they eventually did. This one was even weirder. They said, we're going to have a new argument, but we're not going to tell you what you're going to argue about yet. We'll get back to you. And then on Friday, August 1st at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, to hide it, I think, from the public, the Supreme Court said, we want you to address, and I'm just translating from the court's obtuse language, whether Section 2, if it requires drawing a district like this, is unconstitutional. The second part of the test. If race was the predominant factor, can the Voting Rights Act be the compelling reason to justify it? And the Supreme Court is getting briefs. Louisiana filed its brief a couple of weeks ago, and they said, the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional. They switched sides in the case. They're now siding with the plaintiffs. Strike the Voting Rights Act down, or read it so that it doesn't require drawing race-conscious districts. They say, you cannot draw race-conscious districts. If you cannot take race into account at all, Section 2 is a dead letter. So this case, the Supreme Court fast-tracked it. It's being argued now October 15th. Now, maybe they fast-tracked it because the case had already been briefed, they're already familiar with it, but maybe they want to do something that could affect the 2026 elections. It's possible, not likely, but possible, they could say, Section 2 is unconstitutional, can't be applied to redistricting, and then a number of states that have districts that were drawn, that were required to be drawn to satisfy Section 2, there could be a redistricting, or in Texas's case, a redistricting. I think I had the right number of re's there. Redistricting in order to further consolidate white Republican power in these jurisdictions. So that's one shoe that could potentially drop. The other one is a case that comes out of the Eighth Circuit. Now, when Section 2 cases are brought, they're brought either by the Department of Justice or they're brought by private plaintiffs, like the Legal Defense Fund, or they're brought by the Native American Rights Fund, or MALDEF. Groups bring these cases. It turns out that more than 90% of Section 2 cases are brought by private parties. In this case, Turtle Mountain Band versus Howe, out of North Dakota, the North Dakota was sued for not drawing, this was a state legislative district, to protect Native voters. And North Dakota defended by saying, Section 2 does not allow private plaintiffs to sue. Even though that's, as I told you, 90% of cases have been private plaintiffs suing. There's no private right of action. And the Eighth Circuit agreed. It actually agreed in two different cases. And now this ruling is on hold while we wait for the cert petition to work its way through the process. The Supreme Court's going to take this case. If the Supreme Court, even if the Supreme Court in Calais does not overturn the Voting Rights Act, if they limit it just to the Department of Justice is the one that's enforcing Section 2, that's not going to yield very good results for minority voters. So what would it mean to lose Section 2 entirely or to lose the private right of action? What it would mean would be a huge decline in the number of minority preferred candidates in Congress, in state legislatures, and in on local bodies throughout the country. Anywhere where there is sizable minority populations and there is racially polarized voting, whites and minority voters prefer different sets of candidates, and it's possible to draw a reasonably compact district, there's a chance of winning a Section 2 suit. It has not historically over time produced proportional representation. That worry turned out to not be a problem, but it's given some representation. What would our Congress look like? It would be a lot whiter. It would be a lot more homogeneous, and we would have the situation where minority voters would have even less political power than they have had in the past. And so it could lead in the short term, if the Supreme Court acts quickly, to even more tumultuous times when it comes to what the lines are going to be for the congressional elections, and I'm very worried about how those congressional elections are going to go in terms of whether we can have free and fair elections. That's a topic of a different day in 2026, but it would add even more uncertainty. But even if that doesn't happen in time for the 2026 elections, it would be a sea change. And the only thing that gives me any hope, I'll go back to the first slide, is that what it really took to get effective minority representation was not the passage of the 15th Amendment, and it was not the Supreme Court. It was the people acting. And what it's going to take for us to continue to have a democracy, a multiracial democracy in the United States, I'm hoping that if the Supreme Court actually decides before the 2026 elections that minority voters are no longer going to get protection, then there's going to be a backlash to that, maybe a new civil rights movement, because I don't think we can expect the courts to protect us any longer. So on that happy note, I'm happy to open it up to questions.
Wasn't the Voting Rights Act on a county by county basis? It wasn't state, it was county by county. Am I right?
So the Voting Rights Act applies to, if we're talking about Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, it applies to any jurisdiction that elects a multi-member body, like a city council or county supervisors or a state legislature or Congress, where people are elected by districts.
No, I'm talking about the preclearance.
Oh, preclearance, right. So for preclearance, there were some entire states that were covered, and then there were some states where only particular counties were covered. So it depends. Like California had only 4 counties that were covered out of 52. But in some places, like Alabama, it was the entire state. And when it's the entire state, both the states and the counties had to abide by preclearance. But it It can, if the statewide total was less than 50% and the state used a tester device, the entire state would be covered, and all of the counties, of course, would be covered as a subset of the state. But in states that were above that threshold, but certain counties were below it, those counties were the ones that got covered.
You had kind of alluded to at the beginning about the difficulty of amending the Constitution. Has there been a Voting Rights Act amendment proposed, or several, and what's happened with them?
Well, first let's talk about amendments to the Voting Rights Act itself, statutory amendments. So there's something called the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which would restore preclearance using a new formula and would also do other things, including strengthening Section 2. If Congress were to pass it, there would be the question whether the Supreme Court might strike it down as exceeding Congress's power to enforce the 15th Amendment, or its power to enforce the 14th Amendment. We don't know. Democrats tried to pass it. It passed in the House. When Democrats controlled the House, got filibustered in the Senate, and now Republicans control the House. They're not bringing it up. I should point out that until the vote on the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, the passage of the Voting Rights Act has been bipartisan. In 2006, when I testified before the Senate, it was a very weird experience. Jeff Sessions of Alabama was questioning me and like trying to get me to agree that it would be a good thing to strike it down. I said, I'm not saying what's good and what's bad. I'm making a prediction that the Supreme Court could strike it down. Jeff Sessions voted for renewal of the Voting Rights Act. It was 98-0 in the Senate. But at the same time that a bunch of Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee voted for renewal of the Voting Rights Act, they issued a report saying it's unconstitutional. And the same arguments that were made in that report were the ones that were eventually accepted in Shelby County. So we started to see, even back then, Republican support crash, and very few Republicans now support passage of the Voting Rights Act. On passing a constitutional amendment that would protect the right to vote, an affirmative right to vote, it has been considered in history. It was considered at the time of the 15th Amendment. They considered universal male suffrage. They considered this again in the 1960s. There was a big push for it, and I think it kind of petered out because there were so many statutory changes, and there were other changes like the 26th Amendment barring discrimination for 18 to 21-year-olds. After 2000, there was talk of it, and I'm trying to revive the talk now. And my only hope that we could potentially see a right to vote amendment is because the party coalitions are changing, Republicans appealing more to working class, lower income voters. Those are voters who are most affected by laws that make it harder to register and vote. There may be a time when both parties see it as in their interest to make voting easier, and that would be the time to try and do it. But we have not passed a constitutional amendment. We have not ratified one. Putting aside the 27th Amendment, which was proposed in 1789 and ratified in 1993, we'll put that one aside. The 26th Amendment was passed and ratified in 1971. So most Americans born today were born after the most recent constitutional amendment that's been proposed has actually been enacted. So it's a very hard road. It didn't mention gender. It just said you can't discriminate on the basis of race. Oh, you can discriminate against immigrants, you can discriminate against women, just not on the basis of race. Right. And everything has been framed in the negative in the Constitution.
Professor, thank you for your election law blog. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Can you comment on whether you think the redistricting efforts of, say, Texas and California, whether they'll be affected by the Voting Rights Act at all?
So Texas did its redistricting, and that redistricting plan for Congress is meant to try to get five more Republican seats for the Texas delegation. It's already being challenged as a violation of Section 2. And we'll see what the courts say. The courts could well say that some of those new districts violate Section 2. If Section 2 falls, then that litigation would go away. Same thing if California actually passes its amendments. I don't think that there's a strong Voting Rights Act challenge. I have not heard anything about that. It's possible that someone could try to bring that kind of suit. But first, the measure would have to pass. We're voting on it in November in California, so we'll see.
It's less about law, and more about personality. What do you think John Roberts wants in his legacy as far as something going like the, like abolishing Section 2?
That's a great question. Where is John Roberts in all of this? So let me take you back to 2022. I obviously couldn't cover every Supreme Court decision, but there was a really important one in 2022 involving Alabama's congressional districts. Just like the situation in Louisiana in the Calais case, Alabama was asked to draw a second black opportunity district. And Alabama went to the Supreme Court, complained about it, and said there should be no race consciousness in drawing lines. They didn't directly say the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional, but they said interpret the Voting Rights Act as if it's race neutral, which is a very odd thing to say. John Roberts, Brett Kavanaugh, and the three liberal justices voted to uphold the lower court that said you had to draw that second district. And people were surprised because John Roberts has this long history. And I think part of it was that Alabama's litigation posture was kind of a thumb in the eye of the courts. And I think Roberts was offended by that and wanted to just apply the existing standards. However, when Allen versus Milligan was decided and Justice Kavanaugh provided the key fifth vote, he said, you know, I'm wondering if the passage of time now renders Section 2 unconstitutional. That issue is not raised in this case, but feel free to bring it in another case. And if you combine that with the votes of Justices Barrett, Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito, who in their dissents either said the Voting Rights Act was unconstitutional, private plaintiffs couldn't bring the lawsuits, or it should be read in a way that makes it really weak, if Kavanaugh switched sides, Roberts wouldn't even be necessary. His vote wouldn't even be necessary. Would he dissent from a striking down of Section 2? I don't know. He cares a lot about his legacy, but this is an issue that has animated him, as I said, since the 1980s. Thank you all very much.
Well, you've been listening to the O'Connell Conference at the Eugene Law Center. This next song goes out to the women and children in Gaza who are being killed, because it's always the women and children that suffer the most in war. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. We need an international force, an international peacekeeping force in Gaza. We need that immediately. We need the General Assembly to vote for an international force in Gaza. Hopefully that's happened by now. You've been listening to Professor Richard Hassan.
It is impossible to achieve the aim without suffering.
Possible to achieve the aim.
without suffering. It is impossible to achieve the aim without suffering.
I know that I could easily spend the rest of my life with you.
There's a new governor of racketeering, conspiracy, mail fraud, income tax evasion.
Dismal, pathetic chord sequence.
If you know you have an unpleasant nature and dislike people, this is no obstacle to work.
It was an incredible little piece. Very, very impressed by it.
Ah, yes. How wonderful.
But it just has none of the qualities of your work that I find interesting. Band analogy.
More good advice could hardly be packed into one sentence than there is there.
both those things weren't true. That's definitely true.
Cellophane shrink wrap, so correct. Red dogs under legal age. She looks so good that he gets down and begs. She is watching her contestants. Oh, he's so cute. Watching her contestants.
alone and to realize you're in it. Now, fear is here to stay, love is here for a visit. Call it instant justice when it's past the legal limit. Someone scratching at the window, I wonder who. Is it the detectives come to check if you belong to the parents? You are better to hear the worst about their daughter's disappearance. So it nearly took a miracle to get you to stay. It only took my little fingers to blow you away. Watching the detectives don't get cute. Watching the detectives, I get so angry when the teardrops start. But you can't be wounded when you got no heart. You got no heart when you got no. The detectives, watching the detectives, watching the detectives. Thank you.